Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to our great Big Friday show. And we did it again. We've got a great Big Friday show for you this Friday here at Catholic Answers. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And as you know, we've tried to make Fridays a bit, different. We try to do something a little different because we know the commute home is a little different on Fridays. You just don't feel quite the same on a Friday afternoon as that you do on the rest of the days of the week. So we try not to be the same.
You know, Cy, in
that is Chris Check, our president, who needs to be introduced before he speaks into a microphone. Chris, how are you?
Is that the rule? I thought I made the rules here.
You do. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, in California, the Friday commute is actually lighter.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because there's this...
But people are not in the same mood on a Friday as they are on the other days of the week. I don't know if you're aware of this. Fridays are different.
Fridays here at Catholic Answers seem very joyful to me.
That is true. And we're trying to convey that joy through the airwaves.
Oh, so we're sharing Friday joy.
Exactly, right. And the way we're going to do that today is
why didn't you just say that from the start?
Sometimes, Chris, I am inarticulate or I'm what I call post-articulate. I feel like there was a modern period.
And like post-conciliar?
In my life, I had an articulate period, and now I'm post-articulate. I don't have that.
Okay, I'm going to wait to be introduced.
No, you're not. It's too late for that. So we'll have our panel discussion today, one of the new things that we do here. And I get the great joy of getting to speak to some of the most wonderful people during these panel conversations, people who thus far it's all been folks who work here at Catholic Answers. And I am joined in studio by the aforementioned Chris Check, the president of Catholic Answers. Hello, Chris.
How are you, Cy? It's good to talk to you.
Wait.
Today's my mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom.
Shout out to Mom. I got to meet your mom the other day.
She's very sweet.
What a very nice person.
She's a sweet.
Yes.
Half Italian, half Irish.
I felt palpable disappointment, though.
I think there's some
maybe she wanted a better son. But
she got one. That's Father Paul.
Father Paul.
Yes. No, as I tell people, you can see my parents put all their effort into him.
Yeah. I'm sorry. That was mean.
No, I'm the third. Yeah. By then, they were exhausted.
Yep. Yeah. And also joining us in studio is the director of the Catholic Answers Press, one of the finest Catholic presses in the world, Todd Egliolaro. Hi, Todd.
Does that mean I get to talk now?
Now you can talk. You've been introduced. Yes, you can talk.
Hi, Cy. How you doing?
I'm good. I didn't get to go over the ground rules before we started. No interrupting other people. No stepping on other people when they're trying to talk. You're okay with that, Todd?
I'll just leave now.
No. We're happy. Well, the thing is, the topic that we have for this hour, though, for our panel conversation, and people are invited to call if they would like to contribute to the conversation in any way as we get going. But we are in the midst of a technological revolution, and it's one of those things that is going on all around us all the time with such intensity that it can easily be missed that it's having profound consequences in our lives. And some of the things that we think are innocuous are maybe not innocuous. Some of the things that we think are helpful are maybe not helpful. And some of the things that we don't yet see how wonderful they'll be in the future are a blossoming. So I thought from a Catholic perspective, from the perspective of two well-prepared Catholic men of letters, I'd ask you about that. So Todd, if I may start with you. Your whole life is books. What is technology doing to books? What's the history? What's the future of it? Are books going away?
That's a good question. And the spectrum that you laid out a few seconds ago applies to publishing, to anything else. So to some extent, the increase in the choices for entertainment that people have now with the screens, as you put it, and virtual reality and all that stuff acts as a disincentive to read. On the other hand, e-books, new ways, new media through which to get books to the people are having the opposite effect. So it's a mixed bag, I think.
Do you think kind of the experience of a book? It wasn't that long ago that you wanted to read a book. You had to get a book. You had to go to the library or you got to go to a bookstore. You get a book. You get a physical thing in your hand. You know, I can remember eighth grade carrying home the Lord of the Rings from the library and going into a different world. And it's a very tactile experience. Mm-hmm. Does the loss of that, like maybe, for example, I might now get it on Audible and have somebody else read it to me.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is sentimentality and how much of that is part of the real reading experience. So you've got not just tactility, you've got many of the senses involved.
The smell.
The smell being one of them. The crinkle of a page.
Yeah.
The difference in the way a paper page catches the light compared to a screen, even an e-ink screen. And there are some who say, and I don't think they're being merely sentimental. It seems to be an authentic human experience. There's something in the book, in the physical book, that isn't quite replicated in the electronic format.
How about this, Todd? The capacity, I don't know if this is the correct verb, to interact with a printed book in a way that you cannot with text on a screen. I'm thinking specifically, and I will probably alarm some readers, but I write in books.
Oh, you put your notes in books.
When I'm reading them.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's a first edition or something, maybe I don't, I guess. But there's a relationship between me and that printed word
right.
on that paper. How do you – I mean, I suppose there's a way to do that.
Yeah, and that relationship becomes – so the book becomes literally imprinted with your personality.
Right.
To the next owner, to the person you lend it to someone in a used bookstore 50 years from now.
Well, I think of my father who has, I don't know, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 titles in his library. And one of the joys of going through these – and he spends a good bit of his retirement going through the used bookstores in Fort Worth and Dallas – and one of the joys of looking through his collection, besides seeing the finds that he comes up with from time to time, are the dedications, you know, in the frontispiece to so and so on their confirmation or whatever the reason is, yeah. And there's a whole history.
They become human artifacts,
right?
And you can't put liner notes, you can't underline on a screen, you can't have an author sign an ebook,
right?
On the other hand, though, just to get back real quick side to your question about interaction and what Chris's point was about interaction, to defend the e format a little bit, since it seems to be getting a bad rap here, is there's kinds of interaction you can do with an ebook too. You can you can cross reference words and ideas with the internet. You can look up definitions. I've done that 1,000 times. As I've read books, so again, as with anything, there is a trade-off.
I'm gonna disagree with you. Well, no, I'm not saying that you can't do that because you can, but it seems to me to become sort of mechanical. So, I don't read on screens, but I know you can click on a word and then get the definition or something with that interactability.
Yeah,
but. I was in high school a long time ago, and we had dictionaries next to us when we read books.
Oh, yeah, right.
And if there was a word we didn't know, we looked it up.
What is this dictionary of which you speak?
Yeah.
That was an old thing. That was the thing people used to have.
I still have one in my house.
Yeah, they used to have phone books, too.
I find that mechanism that you described, Todd, to be distracting.
Well,
So, in fact, here's a good example. I should be honest. I do read online crisismagazine.com, for example. I get that in my feed. And so whenever there's an article on there, Tony Esselin has something, and then there'll be live links in there. And I resist clicking the live link because I want to read the piece.
Yeah.
But the temptation is there, and I do that from time to time.
Well, I get that. So an article that's replete with links does create a temptation, kind of ADD hopping around
right.
from one thing to another. And that's right. probably a bad habit of mind. But I think this maybe gets closer to that sentimentality to which I was referring before. I don't share your aversion to the screen as nearly as much. But on the same token,
You're younger.
Well, just a little bit. But I don't have a dog in this fight either. So I see both sides, I think.
Well, you do have a dog in it. You run a press. I mean, Catholic Answers is committed to the printed word.
The boss wants you to be committed to, to books.
No, well, I mean, part of the reason I love Todd is because he shares my love for print.
I do. But I say I don't have a dog in the fight. I don't mean one format over the other.
Right. Yeah.
Certainly I have a dog in the publishing fight.
I will say this, Si. It's necessary and we have to be open to this, for an apostle like Catholic Answers to move in as many media as we can.
But let me throw something out to you about another role of books that I don't – again, this may just be entirely sentimental. But our kids – we have bookshelves in our house, and the bookshelves have books on them. And their friends come over to visit, and they go, why do you have all those books?
We have this experience.
It's similar, but not as important, clearly, but we have a crucifix on the wall when you walk in the house. So somebody might say, why do you have that crucifix? Although they may not know the word for it, but why do you have that on the wall? And there's a way in which I think growing up with magazines on the table and books on the shelf and grab that encyclopedia. And we actually never had an encyclopedia, so I don't want to – we use the web for our encyclopedia. But, you know, grab that reference book or whatever. And we'll – these are things that somehow communicate something about who we are, and I wonder what will replace it, the shelves of books at home.
It does say something about the Kellett family, because people come in and then they see the sorts of books that you have on the shelf. Or Todd, I've been to Todd's house.
They see the amount of dust on the books, meaning. Well,
and Todd has hundreds and hundreds of books all over the house as well. It says, okay, this is a family that reads, yeah, right? But also reads what? You know, what? When I go to Todd's house, I see Chesterton and Belloc on the shelf, for example.
Right.
Right, you come to my house, you'll see Sigurd Undset or Walker Percy or every obscure history of the 16th century.
I've got Daniel Dennett and Christopher Hitchens, so. Which actually upsets me a little bit, because I would get these Daniel Dennett books, read them, and then I'm like, well, do you keep this on the shelf? Because you don't want the kids to grab this off the shelf. They're not ready for it. Do you just see what I'm saying? Daniel Dennett, of course, the famous atheist philosopher. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say,
what do you do with books like that?
Well, I don't have Daniel Dennett in my head.
Well, that's why I keep my Harold Robbins all under the bed, so you're safe that way. No, there is something totemistic. There's something iconic or something sacramental even about the physical
sacramental
presence
is a good word
in your house. Yeah. And something you didn't mention, but where I thought you might have been going, Si, was, and I have children ranging from 6 to 23, so I have a real span there. And I know from my own upbringing too, to be able to wander through a house on a rainy day and pick something up, have something fall out of a shelf, curl up in a corner with. There's a kind of discovery that's possible with a physical book that really isn't with an e-book, because you're kind of intentionally going to it, you know?
That's a very good point. Yeah. I can remember that in my grandmother's house, finding books in the summertime when you get to that bored part of the summertime, and all of a sudden I'm reading a history of Cape Cod. Who needs to read it? You don't need that, but you – it's good for – like there's something wonderful about
it. This is the exact reason that Jack and I filled up the house with books and our kids discovered them. So if it was G.A. Henty or Louis DeWall or John Buchan or whatever, they found them. It was the environment was there, right?
Yeah.
And then they went to them.
Well, this brings us up another part, and we do want to take a break, but I won't keep you forever on this. But as we discuss this advent of a whole new technological world that we're it just feels like it just goes on and on and on, and we're still just scratching the beginning of it. I don't know if that mixed my metaphors there, but I'm scared to do that in front of Todd. I feel bad now.
But no, he's quietly correcting your grammar.
And that's the thing is, in his mind, he's a nope. But here's the why I think this is very, very relevant to our Catholic faith is that what the Church want for us is an interior life that is real and that is expansive, and that it seems to me that in many ways technology, it represents an assault on interiority. And so I'll leave that with you as a thought, and we'll address that when we come back, because Cardinal Burke's coming. I wanted to ask you about this before we go to the break. Cardinal Burke's coming to the conference. You're coming to the conference, Todd?
Yeah,
of course. If people want to say hello to you, they can come say hello to Todd. You know what? When you run a press, do people come up to you all the time and go, I have an idea for a book? Like, does that happen a lot?
Oh, sure.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Some of them are good ideas.
Some of them are
good ideas.
Because now, see, Chris has probably proposed ideas to you. You've rejected those ideas, and now he is mad about it and he wants to bring it out.
The Band-Aid off the wound, Todd.
Let it be said over the airs. Todd did reject a brilliant idea of mine.
But
I just want to show that that's what an open-hearted CEO I am. Yeah. I trust my department heads.
I'm still here.
You know,
to
make good decisions. Years and years ago, back in the 70s, I saw John Updike on the Dick Cavett Show, and I didn't know who John Updike was. And Cavett said, "Do you ever get rejected by The New Yorker if you submit us?" He says, "I get rejected all the time, and I should get rejected all the time."
Take that to heart, Chris.
So you're like John Updike, really.
Well, he had a great
the analogy
style.
Is sound.
Yes,
he was
did
something of a nihilist, I guess.
But he was a wonderful writer. Okay, so tell us about Cardinal Burke and the conference. I'm supposed to talk about that.
CatholicAnswersConference.com coming up at the end of September. And I really think, I don't know, we're down to maybe the last 100 spaces or 150.
Fewer than 100. That's what Erica told me today.
Oh, okay.
Fewer
very good. 100. Yeah, right. Yeah. So faith and science. Catholics have a duty not to get caught flat-footed when the media, when their friends argue that the findings of the laboratory or the observatory are somehow contrary to religion or to faith. They, in fact, are not. If it's true, the Catholic Church owns it, and that is what we're going to equip people to answer at this conference. And we're really blessed, especially, well, of course, the whole lineup will be there, Tim, Jimmy, Trent, Carlo, Father Hugh, yours truly. But we're bringing in Stacey Trusenkos, first-rate chemist and a great speaker, and Father Terrence Ehrman, really first-rate scientists. So there will actually be scientists present at this conference.
Right, indeed. And they can share something of the journey that includes falling in love with science and falling in love with Jesus, two things that do not contradict one another.
No, science should bring you to Jesus.
Yeah, I think I don't know
to Jesus through science.
Father Ehrman's story very well, but with Stacey, it's pretty direct the way science leads.
Well,
her
and Todd, Father Ehrman did a book for us.
Well, that's how we made acquaintance with him. He wrote a wonderful epistolary book about a young man's struggles with growing in the spirit and developing chastity and through correspondence with a priest, loosely drawn on Father Ehrman's own experiences as a professor at Notre Dame, called Man of God.
Chris, epistolary means a book of letters, in case you were wondering.
Thank you.
I just looked it up. I didn't actually know myself.
I was going to hit the hot link here.
There we go. Go to CatholicAnswersConference.com and sign up today.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit MysticMonkCoffee.com. That's MysticMonkCoffee.com.
Peggy Normandin. I was really pretty vain in my mid-20s. I was consumed with all those, you know, superficial trappings in life. Well, during this time, I had a dream where my grandmother appeared to me. She was a very loving, plain, modest woman of great faith. Well, in the dream, she was absolutely radiant. And she said, "This is what I look like now. Everything is perfect in heaven, Peggy. This is all that matters." What a powerful spiritual wake-up call that was.
Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin. Saturdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. It is Friday, panel discussion day here at Catholic Answers Live. In the studio with me, our president of Catholic Answers, Chris Cech, and the director of our press, Catholic Answers Press, Todd Agliolaro. Thank you both for being here with us. We're talking a bit about what technology is doing and from a Catholic perspective, and certainly that I'm glad we talked about the books to start with, because I do think part of the thing about reading a book, and now I'm not saying that reading the book on a screen or anything diminishes this. It may well not. But certainly part of why we encourage reading books, in addition to all the other benefits one gets from it, is it strengthens the interior life. It gives one a more and more vast interior. And I wonder – let me just pose the question to you this way, and I'll start with you, Todd. Would you agree with my basic thesis that the modern technological revolutions we're going through are in many ways an assault on the living of an interior life? The answer is yes.
It probably wouldn't surprise you to hear that I try to take a balanced view of that as well. I think technology is a tool,
yeah,
and all tools have good and bad uses, and it's in the will and in the heart of the user that its helpfulness or lack of can, you know, come out. That said, it's tough. It's tough not to, in the aggregate, look at what the screens, as Chris calls it, and video games and pornography and virtual reality and all of these opportunities to deny oneself development in the interior life and to lose oneself in base pleasures.
Yeah.
Of course, that's not good.
That's an excellent point. To lose oneself in base pleasures, there's a certain way in which it's like you're in a place where with a kind of a garden of sensual delights in many ways. And that's a it's a matter of a temptation more than being a new thing, because we've always faced temptation.
Yeah, and there's another part to that too, if I may. You know, we've always had media, so I was defending the electronic media forms as tools. But there's something particularly insidious about these new forms of media in that you could get addicted to playing pachinko, or you could get addicted to collecting stamps.
Right.
But now, maybe for the first time, we have pursuits. We have the internet. We have video games, where addictiveness and kind of compulsiveness are a feature, not a bug, in those media forms.
Right.
So they're designed to make you kind of an unbalanced person.
Yeah. That's a great point.
So I wonder if what Todd has just said there does not, I won't say run contrary, but at least raise question about, if I understood correctly how you were answering Cy's question, these things are tools and it depends on the use. Pope Francis in Laudato Si says that we have to accept that technological products are not neutral, for they create a framework which ends up conditioning lifestyles and shaping social possibilities. And he goes on to say the technological paradigm has become so dominant that it would be difficult to do without its resources, and even more difficult to utilize them, and I think this is where Todd is going, without being dominated by their internal logic.
Oh, now that's a wonderful little bit that they and so this.
I see. I think they are about control.
Yeah.
I think technology is about control, and I would go back to C.S. Lewis, Abolition of Man, where he identifies three technologies long before any of this stuff we're talking about: the birth control pill or the contraceptive. The wireless radio and the airplane. And all three of these things promised human freedom, some kind of human freedom. But in reality, turned out to be technologies through which one set of men could exercise control over another set.
So the technology gives us power to control. But one of the primary things that ends up being controlled is ourselves, that it gives others power to for example, like these.
I would phrase it this way. So yeah. I would say it promises freedom.
Okay.
And in fact, it enslaves.
Now I'm thinking, okay, so let's just take something as simple as some little game like Candy Crunch or something like that.
Oh, I'm really good at that.
I'm so glad. Congratulations, Chris. But I don't know. I have not played Candy Crunch. But what I read about these games, and I've played games. But mostly I just don't understand them. So I end up playing solitaire or something. But these games are designed to learn your habits, reward you for not turning them off. As a matter of fact, to make it increasingly difficult for you to turn them off. And so is this what you were getting
mm-hmm.
at? Oh, okay. So what's the Catholic – I mean, what does our faith, the history of the Catholic Church, in the face of this new reality, what do the old things have to tell us about how to deal with that?
Well, I wanted to address real quickly, and maybe this is by part way of a response, the passage from Laudato Si that Chris just read. I would agree wholeheartedly with Pope Francis that the technologies are not neutral. They may be neutral in themselves, but they're always going to be put to some use.
Yeah.
So I don't think that necessarily contradicts my point about there being tools, in the same way that a gun or a shovel is is neutral until it's put to either a good or an ill or a morally neutral use. And I think certainly the capacity, and I think the almost dystopian circumstance that the Pope's words suggest there are not a necessary end of the use of technology. If it were, then we'd be caught up in some awfully broad brush thinking, wouldn't we? Is the pacemaker that keeps someone alive, or the autopilot that helps people fly on planes? I mean, these things are technology too. So I think a little bit of distinction has to be made here about what kind of technology ends up, in the Pope's words, dominating us by their internal logic.
Yeah, great question by Todd. The one that is of chief interest to me is modern what we call communication, modern communication technology. And I think that it delivers the opposite of what it promises. And the one thing that I would drill down on here, reality, is that it promises to strengthen human friendships, but I think it actually renders them more abstract.
Like the social media type of thing.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. So technologies are coming that may actually mean disaster for the human race. I'm not talking about nuclear weapons and that kind of thing. A wise person told me that there's another technology that might mean the end of humanity, or at least its significant demise. We'll talk about that when we come back on the other side of this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Why do human persons have a right to life? What does the Church teach about the morality of in vitro fertilization? How can technologies like cloning, embryonic stem cells, fetal tissue vaccines, and designer genetic screening be wrong if they help people? 20 Answers Bioethics tackles the topics where life, science, and morality meet, offering solid guidance that combines the wisdom of authentic Catholic anthropology with shrewd understanding of the medical and political realities. 20 Answers Bioethics is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting series from Catholic Answers Press.
Hi, this is Trent Horn. Did you know that you can have me and other Catholic Answers speakers headline your next conference or parish event? Go to CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com to get all the information you need to book one of our dynamic speakers today. That's CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com.
Why did God employ prophets in Scripture? How can we interpret symbolic biblical prophecies and recognize their fulfillment? What about prophecies from Jesus and Revelation that foretell persecution, calamity, and the end of the world? In 20 Answers Bible Prophecy, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, cutting through the confusion and presenting the basic scope of scriptural prophecy in a way that anyone can understand. 20 Answers Bible Prophecy is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting series from Catholic Answers Press.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. Do you have questions about the Catholic faith? Listen for the best of Called to Communion on Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern and live on Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Called to Communion on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host, joined in studio by Chris Check, our president, and Todd Agliolaro, the director of Catholic Answers Press. We're having a discussion about technology and the human person, I suppose would be a way to say it. But and what does this these many technological revolutions that we are currently caught up in, are they heading to good or ill? And does the wisdom of the Church have some guidance for us to maybe direct them towards good and away from ill? You expressed some frustration at the break. Now, I hope I'm not talking out of school, that Chris, who is the president of a media company, doesn't seem entirely sanguine about the good possibilities for media.
Frustration is probably too strong a word, but okay. I pointed it out that we use these technologies not just to replace physical human interaction, but to spread the gospel and to help people understand the faith,
and use them quite successfully.
Yeah,
yeah, and I it's not a question of conceding what Todd is saying. I completely agree with them. And Catholic Answers file cabinets are full of testimonies who have been helped by a radio show or helped by Catholic.com or the forums or all the other various technologies that communication technologies that we avail ourselves.
But I have to say, there is a certain quality about what we do in the in all of these places of we're fighting almost a rear guard action in the sense that. Like we're on Twitter in a, I don't want to say that we're desperate, but in a sense, like we better be on Twitter because look what else is on there. We're on Facebook because we better be there or on YouTube or radio and television and all that.
100%, 100%. And Rochelle, who was, well, on in the pre-show there,
yeah.
Of course, has done a master's degree in theology from Franciscan, has done an absolutely superb job in bringing Catholic Answers social media. My friends, if you're not subscribed to Catholic Answers Daily, Catholic Answers Weekly, go to Catholic.com and in the upper right-hand corner of the website there, give us your email. And Rochelle has done a magnificent job of curating into a daily and a weekly email newsletter examples of the many different ways that we communicate the gospel to people, be it video or the printed word or an audio clip or what have you. And we have to operate in all those media. Absolutely.
Todd.
To speak to that rear guard action comment that you made a minute ago, I'll give you maybe the best example of the limits of my open-mindedness on this question, because even though I take issue with some of the things Chris has said, I think we're probably much closer in our positions than this conversation might suggest. And that's the question of video games. I despise them. I think they're another waste of time. I see my own children spending an inordinate amount of time on them. I have to constantly police them. I think that they have great potential to do harm. On the other hand, that's evangelization ground. That's missionary ground. And I know right here in San Diego County is John Paul the Great Catholic University, where one of my own children is a student and is studying, among other things, video game design as a form of evangelization. And I was very skeptical when he first started, but it was explained to me in a convincing way that the goal is to inject into this art form,
yeah,
which is what they say that it is, a moral center.
Yeah.
And you have whether we like it or not, this virtual world is where people are going to be living in the next century, and yeah, they're going to be making moral decisions, and they're going to be learning, and they're going to be formed, and we can either seed that ground or we can try to inject the gospel into it.
I'm glad Todd brought up games, video games, but games generally. I think of games as something in the main that human persons do with other persons. Now, I know it's possible to have two-player, four-player, or there are even video games now, I understand, or computer games where you could be playing with some stranger.
That's how most people play now, I think.
Korea,
in Moscow or wherever. And he's probably stealing
Vladimir Putin.
All of your election secrets or something yeah, at the same time.
While you're playing.
Right, right. So I tend to think of human interaction as incarnational. This is going to sound a little glib. God didn't send a text message. He sent his son. That's why we say incarnation. So for me, a lot of this spins on the question of presence. Are we, and my friend John Cuddeback, who's been on the show.
Wonderful.
He talks about this a great deal. Are we present to one another? Now, for example, the three of us couldn't be more present to one another. We are all physically present in the studio here. Our presence to the listening audience is, maybe once removed or something like that.
Right.
But they're engaged because they're listening. But the more, I would say the more that we can be present to one another,
yeah,
and insofar as these technologies interfere with being present to one another, that's when we have to say, okay, very well, we are reaching a lot of people. But when Tim Staples goes to speak at a parish and that room is full and there he is, incarnate on the stage, and then afterwards when he's staying in the parking lot, as he will do to 2 a.m.
Yeah, I know he will.
Talking to some person who won't let go of his last little objection to, the sinlessness of the Blessed Virgin or whatever it is. That is, That's an incarnational moment.
Yeah. I find when I go to speak in a parish, people say they prefer me on radio. They'll go, less incarnational would be probably better in your case. So I just want you to know that might go
the
both
face
ways.
For radio. Si, you look at you. You're great. What are you talking about? No one has said that.
Yeah. Well, Steve in Milford, Michigan has a question along these lines. Steve, your comment.
Hello.
Hello.
Sorry. So I'm going in for computer science. So I'm kind of going on the technology positive side of the spectrum. But I guess I kind of wanted your take on this idea. I'm specifically going for computer object-oriented programming for such as like video game design. But I wanted to take it into a different, I guess, atmosphere of using virtual reality technology to possibly do an interactive rosary for people that struggle with meditation and such, to kind of, because I know that when you're praying the rosary and you're saying the Hail Mary, each mystery you're supposed to be reflecting on and envisioning what's going on in the gospel message. Would that be, I guess I just have a question of what are the pros and cons that you could possibly see for an idea like that?
Either of you want to take it, or?
Well, you might guess what my answer is. I think that's great. I'm trying to picture what you're describing about a virtual reality rosary. Would this be a kind of audio-visual experience? Would it be 3D
yes.
projected or something like that?
More like audio-visual experience. I know a lot of people will tell you to imagine yourself in the scene that the rosary is going on, taking place. So, like, if you had a headset on, I know, like, a lot of the popular ones were to put a cell phone in it. And if you look around, it's like you're standing in the, wherever the video is, and you're standing in a spot, and say they were in the Sahara or something. Like, if you look behind you, there's the lions. If you look ahead of you, there's elephants. Something like that, where it's really more of a video going on, and you're able to see, such as the Virgin Mary have Gabriel appear to her and such. Just to kind of help you
so
find the mindset.
Digital icons. You're describing digital icons, and the church has been using those as aids to recollection and prayer for centuries.
Yeah, so I would probably be more reticent about something like that than Todd is, and for the very reason, Steve, that you brought up. Because you said that when we pray the rosary, we are encouraged to imagine the mysteries on which we are contemplating, or about which we are contemplating. And I see a mechanism, a platform such as you're describing as debilitating to the human imagination, which can be assisted by, of course, a beautiful image, Todd used the word icon, which I would probably describe in a more confined way, but an icon, a painting, something like that, but nonetheless, or even just some lines of text of the gospel, and then the human imagination engages. And when it is surrounded by images, even if you're in the movie, so the difference here, imagine the difference between watching a movie and reading the book. Si brought up Lord of the Rings. Well, when we go to see the movie with Elijah Wood, et cetera, all of those images that we as children, when we were reading those books in our, you know, in our beds at night with the flashlight after our parents had told us to go to sleep, all those images get replaced now. So now you're taking what you're thinking of, and I wouldn't dismiss it out of hand, but just to contemplate this, what you're thinking of is taking sacred images that are intended for us to engage with our imaginations, and now out of your imagination, and maybe, by the way, your images would be very, very beautiful, but they might not be mine. And so I think that interaction of the human imagination with the mystery potentially could be debilitated. Who's the lady who's a regular guest from time to time? She teaches at Houston Baptist College.
Holly.
Yeah.
Ordway.
Holly Ordway.
Dr. Holly Ordway.
It was, I don't know, a couple, three months ago, an excellent show on this that I would encourage people to dig in the archives for, Holly Ordway, on technology and the human imagination, and especially the imaginations of children.
Well, I am very interested in Steve's question as well, and I would like to respond to you, Steve, before I go back to you, because I do think both of these responses are very powerful and helpful. The purpose of prayer is to relate with God, is to be friends with God ultimately. And if it's leading towards that, I think that that's a positive thing. However, I think for myself, sometimes a movie is so powerful that I'm really relating to the movie. I'm not relating to God. And I would be worried for myself if I would be able to not to stop marveling at the multimedia experience, so to speak, and actually relate to God.
Or the skill of the actor. Or, you
know. And I also would just add this. I think that one of the most powerful tools in the spiritual life of children is boredom. I don't think we allow them to be bored anymore. I think that's a terrible, terrible loss. And so it seems to me, would not be boring. And that there is actually a use for boredom sometimes. So I think for if it can help a person and maybe even lots and lots of people actually relate to God, more power to you. But there that will be limited. There has to come a point where people do move directly into relating to God as their friend, as their father, and not just through powerful imagery and things.
As a follow-up, if I may, to what Chris said a second ago, I think back, you mentioned The Lord of the Rings, which I read to my children a couple of times, and I read it to my oldest, and when he finally saw the movie, the really well-done Peter Jackson films, and Samwise was played by Sean Astin, and he said, Sam looked a lot different than I imagined he would look. And I said, well, what did you imagine he would look like? He said, I thought he looked like me. Because he had identified with Sam as Tolkien himself said, Sam is really the hero of The Lord of the Rings. It's not Frodo or Gandalf or any of the other heroic characters in it, but it's Sam, the common man. But I think what Chris is trying to carve out the difference between imagining, say, when you read a book and seeing an image that replaces your imagination, you still have to contend with the reality of sacred art, which does put an image in your face. Sometimes some kinds of art are very right. photorealistic.
It does, and I'm not going to be able to form a sufficient objection or response to what you're saying, but I would say that there is a difference in kind between a motion picture and a still.
So then devotional films, such as are made by many of the apostolates in our family of apostolates, you would object to those?
I wouldn't object to them if they were helping people.
Okay, so is there maybe a quality question here? It's not simply that it's this or that medium, but is it done with a high level of quality and tastefulness and that sort of thing?
Well, I think that better art good art is better than bad art.
Explain.
No, please don't explain why good art is better than bad art. Only because I got to take a break.
And I think everyone agrees with me.
The good art is better than bad art?
Yes.
Just in general.
Yes, the word better is directly related to the word good. They come from the very same beginnings. I got to let you know, though, that if your student is heading off to school, especially college is a place where the faith can be challenged, sometimes intentionally, by professors and other students and probably media and those things as well. And we'd love your student to have a copy in hand every couple months of Catholic Answers magazine. The whole purpose of Catholic Answers magazine is to help answer the objections of the culture of that professor or that other student. And it really does help. It's one of the finest Catholic magazines in the world.
You can hold it in your hand.
You can hold it in your hand.
Or read it online.
It's a physical object. You just put in M School. That's the letter M and then the word school when you check out, and you get the lowest price in years on Catholic Answers Magazine. You do that at CatholicAnswersMagazine.com.
Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
I feel that God has been really doing a work in me in the last 5-10 years I'm a convert to Catholicism, and I started to just really feel a passion to know more about the Catholic faith, and I started listening to Catholic radio all day. I'm not doing great things, but I'm doing small things with great love.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Pope Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. So much to cover, so little time. And I do want to get to more calls, but I teased earlier that there's a technology that may mean a significant harm to the human race moving forward. At least I'm told that may be the case. I'm not talking about nuclear bombs or precision weapons or not even Skynet or anything like that. Do you two know what Skynet is when I make that reference?
I do.
Okay, fair enough. That's
the book. That's the 5 years between Todd and me.
But I believe I'm older than you, Chris, and I know what Skynet is.
Uh-huh. Well, you have a responsibility to be aware.
Out in the marketplace of ideas. Yeah. That's where I spend my life, Chris. Okay, so I'm going to be very delicate about this, and I would ask you, gentlemen, to be careful in your language. It's a family show. However, there are robots now being constructed that can do for men and women what human beings are supposed to do. Is that a fair way to say that? Is that too euphemistic?
I think people can fill in the blanks there. Huh?
This seems extremely dangerous, in part because, and I will defer to you, Todd, because actually some of the ideas I'm expressing now, I actually am stealing from you. So thank you very much. But you have artificial intelligence that is designed to scan you for your emotions or whatnot and manipulate your emotions. In other words, these things are included into things that are more and more physically realistic to the point where we can imagine in a very short order that they will be virtually indistinguishable from a human being. Why is this dangerous, Todd?
Well, I think it's probably the most dangerous thing in the world, as you teased. And look, the communion of husband and wife is the core of society, right? We say the family is the fundamental unit of society, and the family is based on the marital bond, and at the core of conjugal life is sex. And when that primal need for communion that draws husband and wife together,
right?
Now we've been picking away at that for 100 years.
Yes,
we've been picking away at it with infidelity, with contraception, with pornography. What these robots, these lifelike dolls, promise or threaten to do is radically complete that experiment. Taking the fantasy world of pornography to an infinitely greater degree, and for so many people of a young age now, looking forward, will replace the communion of husband and wife, and replace the innate natural biological drives that lead them to couple with one another and form conjugal lives, and this can do nothing less then tear down what remains of the fabric of society.
Now, I'm struck by this in part because you are a generally receptive to technology as a potential, the potentials for good in technology, mm-hmm. more so than Chris and I would say. So at least according to the discussion thus far today. And yet you're saying this is the most dangerous thing in the world.
I think it is. And not only am I generally open to technology, but I don't think I'm prone to exaggeration. So when I do say that, I mean it. And I think that the logic checks out. Mm-hmm. There's already a phenomenon of, as we all know, of pornography addiction, people getting lost in fantasy worlds, but they're incomplete. They're ephemeral.
Yes.
And we're seeing now in certain parts of the world where culturally they're a little bit further along the road to acceptance of the idea of life companionship with an inanimate object.
Right.
I mean, there are some cultures where they're closer to that maybe than we are here in the United States. But they're getting there, and the stigmas to such a thing that we might imagine would form pretty strong barriers to that kind of behavior are diminishing. And the technology just doubles annually, and the lifelike experience that women and men, particularly men, are finding themselves able to have with these machines,
right?
It gets more and more close to a true physical experience, and that, I mean, once we hit that kind of singularity point with these kinds of dolls or robots, whatever they're calling them, look out.
Sai, I think this goes exactly to what we were talking about earlier with respect to human relationships and being present to one another. And, of course, it goes to that central reality of human experience, that bond between husband and wife, without which there is no human society. On Wednesday, we celebrated the Feast of the Assumption. And I would encourage our readers, our listeners, to go back and read the first reading from the Mass on the Feast of the Assumption, which is from Revelation, describing the dragon and all of the stars, or a third of the stars being swept from the sky, and the dragon waiting to devour the baby. And the traditional interpretation by the fathers of this passage in Revelation is that those third of the stars swept from the sky are the fallen angels. And the image of the baby being born calls to our attention God's desire to replace in the heavenly kingdom those spaces left by the fallen angels with human persons. And so the devil especially hates. He especially hates. And we're seeing this now with all of the horrible revelations coming out from Pennsylvania and elsewhere. The devil especially hates marriage and the procreative act, that unique invitation to cooperate with God. There's nothing like it. There's the confecting of the Eucharist that the priest does. I'd say that's in a category by itself. But this unique invitation to cooperate with God in the peopling and in the populating of the heavenly kingdom. The devil hates this because he sees this is the replacement of the fallen angels. And so what Todd is describing, and I have to confess a little naivete, I'd never even heard of these things. And then you guys tell me at the break they're being made up the road here in San Marcos, yeah, right here in Southern California.
Right.
Lord have mercy. But this is Todd is exactly right, that this is, if you want to destroy the human race, you go to the thing that it depends on, right? Conjugal love between husband and wife.
Right.
Terrifying.
And it's the perfecting of our vices, like making them, but the perfecting of the satiating of our worst qualities, or our most, you know, we talk in terms of perverse desires. That is, God made us desiring creatures. That desire, our desire is one of the, is actually probably the most beautiful thing about us, the most powerful thing about us.
And we desire to be loved.
Right. But it's the perversion of those desires, and they're focusing on things that are less than they should be focused on.
Or that, replacements.
Replacements.
Substitutes.
Right. That constitutes evil. And if you make robot women and robot men who can replace real men and real women, and people come to satiate the desires on these things, then it's a kind of perfecting of evil, really.
Yeah, and it's a denial of our nature. So I don't want to get too much into that kind of talk, because that's really Carla's specialty, not mine. But it is a corollary of another technological danger that's on the horizon. That's transhumanism.
Yeah,
and in both cases, you've got a purpose for which man was made, that which is ordered towards his perfection and ultimately his happiness, our happiness, and in a recreation of the sin of Genesis 3, a recreation of the Garden of Eden, we identify for ourselves our own slightly skewed end. So we take the good thing God gave us, and we just pervert it, is the word. We don't recreate our own good. But we twist
it. Bend it.
And we bastardize it just a little bit.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Todd Agliaro, Chris Check, thank you for a very fine hour. Stay for another hour, please.
Okay.
Will you? There's no drinks. I'm sorry. There's no bar. There's no open bar. You just
not what I was promised.
We lied to you, Todd. But next hour, we're going to get a little hopeful. I do want to talk with you. We will not neglect to talk about, a little bit at least, about the scandals and those things in the church as a way of setting up, however, a more extended discussion about the signs of hope in the church itself, the signs of hope for renewal and revivification of the institutions and the persons of the church. We'll do that when we come back on Catholic Answers Live with Todd Agliaro and Chris Check right after this.